Hey, thanks for tuning in tonight to Answers for the Paranormal. For Sunday, May 24, 2020, we are Answers for the Paranormal. My name is Bill Posey, and I'm the host for the broadcast tonight. With me on the other line in his office in Horsham, Pennsylvania, is my co-host Joe Marotti. Hey, Joe. Good evening.
How you doing, brother? Good evening to you. And good evening to all our listeners, even if you're listening to this in the morning. Good evening.
Yeah, it's going to be a great day today. Was able to get out a little bit for a nice early morning walk with the dog, and my day just got a lot better after that.
But, beautiful.
Yeah. So hopefully yours went as well, Joe. And
nothing like starting off your day with walking the dog.
Yeah.
That's peace for me. That's beginning a day peacefully.
Yeah. Same with me. And
unless you come upon a bunch of people that are wearing masks who act like you have the bubonic plague.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was just going to bring up because. Yeah. You know, getting out there early in the morning in the fresh air and being able to breathe without one on, since I have to wear one in my business.
Yes.
Thanks to the crazy governor we have here in the state of Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. You know, it's great that you can actually breathe.
It sure is, Bill. The only time I wear one is when I'm forced to wear one inside stores.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I get out, boom, it's off. As a matter of fact, I took mine off so fast today coming out of, where was I, Lowe's. I couldn't wait to get it off, so I broke both the straps. That's another trashed mask.
Yeah.
So I got to be a little more careful next time. They're not cheap.
No, they're not. Well, again, we want to thank you for tuning in tonight to Answers for the Paranormal. And we're going to take a little break from our series we've been doing, Coronavirus Chaos. And we're going to talk tonight about the economy and the Federal Reserve. And we have a guest tonight to talk over with that subject. So, Joe, why don't you introduce who we're going to be speaking with tonight?
Tina Foster's back with us. Tina's a good friend of ours, and she's been a very frequent guest over the last, 5 or 6 years, I'd say. She's the author of two books, Splitting Image, Exposing the Secret World of Doubles, Decoys, and Imposter Replacements, and also Plastic Macca, The Secret Death and Replacement of Beatle Paul McCartney. Tina, welcome back.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great to have you back.
Yeah, so this book I'm working on now about the banks is actually going to be under my real name, which is Cynthia Hodges.
Uh-oh, the mask is off.
And the title is going to be Den of Vipers, with a subtitle that is going to say something like, Surviving the Central Banker's Fake Economy. Haven't totally decided on the subtitle. That Den of Vipers is from a famous quote by Andrew Jackson, who was an enemy of the central bank. And he fought long and hard to make sure America didn't have the central bank. And he considered his greatest triumph to be that he killed the bank. But it wasn't without its disadvantages, because they did apparently try to take him out. But amazingly, the assassin, he had two pistols, and they both misfired. And then later, Andrew Jackson ended up hitting the guy over the head with his cane, and I forget his name offhand, but he was convicted. Well, he was adjudged not guilty by reason of insanity. But then later, historians tested the pistols, and they fired no problem.
Wow.
So it was like an incredible odds that they both misfired.
Sounds like a topic for another show.
Yeah. I mean, anybody who comes out against the Federal Reserve or the central banks is really, you know, taking a big risk.
Oh, for sure. So are we calling you Cynthia or Tina?
You know, I've been called much worse than either one.
I'm used to calling you Tina. It's just not going to feel right calling you Cynthia.
That's fine. Either I'll answer to both.
Okay. I'll try to remember Cynthia. Okay.
But I want to leverage my education for this banking book because I have two law degrees and I'm a member of the Washington State Bar. And
beautiful.
And I have a master's in Germanic studies, but that's not as related. But I also have about 7 years of experience in investing. And I mean, I don't have formal education in investing and economics, but I've studied and researched as part of my work. So, and I mean, there are other lawyers that write economics books, so I'll just join the party.
There you go. And Bill, we've interviewed a lot of people over the years. I think they all have degrees.
Yes.
Some of them multiple degrees.
Multiples.
I have none. How about you?
There's no letters after my name, Joe. I just have the experience of living too long and seeing too much crap. So that's where my education comes from.
Well, unless you consider SOHN degree, which is what we both have,
yes.
School of Hard Knocks.
Yep.
So, well, that's good. That's good to hear. That's good to hear that. Now, let me ask you real quick, Tina. This is or Cynthia. This is going to be your third book, right?
Actually, I mean, I have two books under Tina that deal with the doubles, imposters, and Pomodoro. But I have about three translations under my real name, Cynthia, and I have actually two science fiction books, and I edited a book on the Illuminati, and
Now that book on the Illuminati I have on my Kindle, and that's a great book.
Thank you. Well, my friend actually was recruited, or they tried to recruit him, and they wanted him to write a book on the Illuminati to help recruit people, but then he decided to turn on them and rewrote this expose. And he ended up dying a few years after at a relatively young age. So he was only in his mid-50s.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know if, you know, that was related or not. I never really found out what happened. So. Mm.
So how hard is it to write a book? How difficult is it?
It depends on your skill set. I mean, I have a lot of experience with academic writing, both with my master's in Germanic studies, but also in law school. So we really hit the research and writing. And you get a lot of practice and training and in schooling in writing these research papers. So you just gather up all your quotes that you want to use, and then you assemble them. It's like weaving.
Mm.
And it just happens to be something that I'm good at. For me to write a fiction book like Harry Potter would be a lot harder.
Right.
Yeah.
Because these books, they almost write themselves because you get your sources. And I'm using sources like Muhammad El-Aryan and Rubini and all of these economists like Peter Schiff. And so my quotes are for people who know what they're talking about.
Right, right.
And then I just sort of put it in an easy to read way that makes sense, that's digestible. Because I think that our economic situation is pretty dire, and we haven't really seen anything yet.
Right. Well, yeah, I think... it's on my bucket list, Bill. Before I die, I mean, a lot of people want to visit places. I want to see this. I want to do this. I want to do that. One of my bucket list items is to write a book. So that's where my curiosity comes in. I don't think I have the focus to do it, but I, you know, things happen. So we'll see.
Yeah, I myself have about four that I've started and never finished on a lot of different subjects. So yeah, that's on one of one of the things on my bucket list as well, Joe, is to actually finish up one of those four manuscripts and take it to completion. So maybe I'll just send it to Cynthia and have her edit it and send it back to me.
That's what I was thinking. We've got a connection.
Yeah. So Cynthia, from what I've gathered, you're also a daughter of two persons who also have attained kind of a place of prominence. Is that right?
My parents, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, my father is actually, he has a PhD in economics.
Okay.
So, and then my mother is an artist.
Yeah.
A fine art of realism.
So. Yeah, I've seen some of your mom's work, I guess, from just some of the stuff that you posted, so it's quite talented.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, my father wrote a book about George Washington and leadership principles, and he's working on another one. I think I'm supposed to edit it. So I don't think it's as focused on George Washington this time, but... Yeah, so I guess I get my interest in economics and finance from that. So.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. You can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, I think understanding money is pretty important. I think a lot of people really don't understand how the system is set up, and it's so easy to manipulate people, and it's not good.
No.
Boy, isn't that the truth.
It's very precarious right now, and I could see all of this coming, and that, you know, that's happening with the coronavirus.
Yeah, let's get into that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I could see, like, this huge problem coming, and, you know, of course, it's the Federal Reserve. You can pin it on them, on their policies.
Right.
They're not the only central bank that does this, but they're, you know... They're our central bank. And so they have these crazy policies. And then, but they don't want to actually take the blame for it. So when the coronavirus came along, it pulled the pin on the economy. And then, of course, everybody blames coronavirus for this problem. But really, that was just the last straw. Like, that was the one thing the economy couldn't handle anymore before it exploded.
Wow. Okay. Now, before we get into that, now push the pause button for a second. This kind of ties into it. I broached the subject with Bill about an icebreaker question that I'm dying to ask the both of you, because I asked and I already answered to myself. So I was laying and trying to wake up this morning, and I said, "Self, come up with a Mount Rushmore of orchestrated deceptions." Mm. And here is my Mount Rushmore. And I want to see if you guys agree or disagree. And I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I think that it plays into certainly tonight and all the things that we do all the time. So here's my Mount Rushmore of orchestrated deceptions in order. Number one, the current one, COVID-19. Number two, the creation of the Federal Reserve System. Number three, the Apollo moon landings. Number 4, 9/11. And my honorable mentions are JFK's assassination, all of the mass shootings, you can combine them all, and Roswell.
Mm. Of course, I would put Paul McCartney on that list, but, but you know, that's just my pet conspiracy theory. So
you would put Paul McCartney before JFK?
No. I would at least make him an honorable mention, though.
Okay, that's good. I'm going to write that on my whiteboard right now. Paul McCartney. Now, shame on me. We were having Tina Foster / Cynthia Hodges, and I didn't even include that in my honorable. I'm sorry.
Now, when you say the Roswell crash, do you mean that it didn't happen at all, or what exactly?
Well, that it did happen, but they weren't aliens.
I see.
Yeah.
That's probably true.
And then we could spend a lot of time on that, and we have with our past guest, Guy Malone, on that.
Yeah.
But what? Let me hear yours.
The Federal Reserve, that was the beginning of the end for this country. So
would you have that above COVID right now?
Yes, it's a...
Wow, okay.
Well, COVID is more, hopefully a transitory problem. I mean, the central bank, the Federal Reserve, when that came in, that was the beginning of the end for this country, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I do not disagree.
Yeah, it just takes a long time for the patient to die, basically. COVID certainly isn't helping, but... It is helping with the New World Order agenda in some ways, but in other ways, it's backfiring on them. So, for example, the New World Order people, they want one world government, and you can hear Kissinger call for that with the coronavirus response. You know, he's...
Mm-hmm.
To have one world government, like no country can just handle it alone. But then it also shows the weakness in having everything dependent on China or other countries for your supplies and your food. And then other people like Trump are saying, well, we need to be self-sufficient and have our own manufacturing. And of course, that makes sense, right? I mean, that was something Alexander Hamilton had said, that make sure you have your own supply lines. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but
yes.
Don't be dependent on some foreign country, you know, on the other side of the world for your basic needs. So, and then also the New World Order global elite, they want open immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Willy nilly, anybody comes in. And other people are saying, well, wait, what? We're locked down because people came in who had this flu, right? And so does it make sense to just let anybody in? And
right. And
then we're all going to get sick, so that doesn't work either. So it's not helping them in a couple of ways, but they are using fear to help their agenda, in that they're getting people to go away from cash, which, of course, the cashless agenda has been in play for a long time. They've wanted that. And now they can say, oh, it's a vector for coronavirus. It's like, oh, because your, you know, credit card isn't, you know, the buttons on the keypad aren't, and everything else you touch, but just cash. You can't touch cash. Like, really? And so then, but they get people to buy into it. And also... Well, the mask is interesting because on the one hand, it acts like a muzzle.
I thought that same thing.
Yeah, it acts like a muzzle, and you're showing your subservience.
That's it.
To a certain degree.
Yep.
But then it also interferes with facial recognition. And the criminals are exploiting it because I mean, they're wearing a mask. I mean, that's what criminals do, right? If they want to rob something, then they are not recognized. So I'm not sure the powers that be really thought that one out all the way.
Right.
But then they also have, you know, the COVID, they're releasing the criminals. And, you know, even up here in Washington State, they released a criminal. He immediately went to some trail and attacked the hiker.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, everybody's like, well, why are they releasing criminals? That doesn't make any sense. And they're saying, oh, we want to protect them from coronavirus. It's like, oh, they're safer from coronavirus out with the population than in the prison. But see, I think what they're doing is they're releasing the criminals to make room for the dissidents.
Yes.
So the pastors who dare to have Sunday service, or the salon owners who dare to trim hair, it's absurd. That's what I think.
Boy, I gotta try to muzzle myself right now from writing down more questions for Tina, for Cynthia. But let me back up a little bit, because I want to ask a question based off of what you mentioned about the move towards a cashless society. So the Federal Reserve prints Federal Reserve notes, but if there's no cash and a bunch of cryptocurrencies that are emerging and have been and are some are established, like Bitcoin, what role does the Federal Reserve actually have when it comes to our economy and the world economy?
It would still basically do the same thing, but it would just be all digital. And so everything would be just going directly into your bank account, coming directly out of your bank account. Everything would be tracked. You can be automatically taxed. You could be automatically fined. There would be no anonymity in any purchase at all. So they want to have total control over you. And this has been something that's been in the works for at least 50 years, this cashless agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't be, I don't think they're going to go to Bitcoin. They're going to have their own version. It'll be, some people think it will be the SDR, standard drawing rate, that is IMF, the International Monetary Fund. But it could just be that all of the Federal Reserve notes are now digital. And they don't print any more notes at all.
Yeah.
I don't think that they're going to let Bitcoin compete with Federal Reserve.
Let me ask you about that, because the whole premise of Bitcoin was to make an end run around decentralization, right? You have where the quote-unquote miners are the ones who validate the transactions that are taking place, right? So you don't have a central bank controlling the funding. So, and I agree that I think that the bankers have already caught on to what was being attempted there and have now just established their own way of doing a blockchain type of transaction. So do you see it as Bitcoin being destroyed in some way, whether it's by a government type takeover, or do you think that it will just wane in its application, and then the Federal Reserve type of blockchain taking over? Is that how you see it?
I'm actually surprised that the Federal Reserve and the government have allowed Bitcoin and digital currencies to compete with the Federal Reserve note, because we had banking acts to consolidate all the currencies, because the banks used to print their own bank notes. And, we had the Constitution, so, okay, the states can't do that anymore. And but it was all like a big mess. There was all these different bank notes. Like, okay, we're gonna have one currency, the Federal Reserve note. Well, you know, it wasn't Federal Reserve until 1913, but there was, you know, National Banking Act, and it was meant to clean up all of the different currencies. So I'm surprised they've let this competing digital currency continue. I guess if it's a private, maybe they're considering it like a private way to transact business. Because I think that is permissible.
Mm-hmm. Well, you kind of have that, like, with PayPal and...
Well, PayPal is still using Federal Reserve notes, so it's going from one bank to another as a sort of an intermediary. But Bitcoin will probably stay as a an investment, like, quote-unquote, investment. More than as, I don't really see it catching on as a way to transact business because the cost of transacting business have risen a lot, like from the beginning. And also a lot of people are not accepting it because it varies so much that the price can be very different from when the transaction is initiated to when it's actually settled. And so even they'll have Bitcoin conferences, and they won't accept Bitcoin as payment for their conference. So, but, you know, a lot of people have bought into Bitcoin, and, you know, this is completely, it's illusory, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're touting it as some sort of replacement for gold and silver.
Yeah.
That it's like, it's digital. It doesn't exist in reality. It's not good for anything. You can't make jewelry out of it or coins or, you can easily lose your key to get into it or somebody could hack it.
Yeah.
And then it's gone. I know somebody who gave their kid like 3 Bitcoins and he promptly lost them. Doesn't know how to get access to them anymore. And so, I mean, it's definitely not digital gold.
No.
I mean, gold is the safe haven for turbulent times. Like, it maintains its purchasing power over thousands of years. So, if you're... See, I'm not giving economic or financial advice. I'm just saying what I do and what people have done in these sorts of situations. So gold, like an ounce of gold historically, has bought a man's suit. It in the Roman times, it bought like the armor and, you know, the whole, you know, suit of armor that you needed. And then in, I guess, 1920, you know, 1 ounce of gold would buy a nice man's suit. And then even today, $1,700, that would buy a nice man's suit.
Yeah.
So it's pretty stable in that regard.
Yes, and it is.
When you have the main problem that's going on right now, the Federal Reserve is pumping about $6 trillion into the economy.
Right.
And they're saying, oh, we have such low inflation. They want to have 2% inflation. That's their goal. So they have a mandate of steady money supply. One of their mandates is full employment, which is really only 95% employment, and the other is to keep a stable dollar. But then they say, oh, we want 2% inflation every year, which is already not a stable dollar. It's already inflating at 2% a year. So that doesn't make any sense. That's illogical, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then they say, okay, we have this low inflation. And so that gives them the excuse to go ahead and pump all of this $6 trillion. And now I hear that their balance sheet is actually $7 trillion. But they pump all this money for the stimulus bill, CARES Act. And then they say, oh, we have this low inflation. Well, the thing is that the inflation is a lie. They manipulate the core CPI, the core consumer price index, sorry. They manipulate those numbers. So before, they would say, they would actually compare apples to apples and oranges to oranges, right? But now they use substitution. So before they would say, they would look at the price of steak and say, okay, steak cost X amount and that's dollars then, and now it costs this now. And they would see how much of an increase. Well, now they say, well, you can substitute hamburger for steak. And so the price hasn't really changed that much.
Yeah.
So that's how they fiddle with the number. So really, like John Williams at Shatterstock, he's saying that inflation is probably more like 7%. And that was before all of the $6-7 trillion got pumped into the economy. So I just saw an article recently that April had the highest prices at the grocery store since 1974. But then we have such low inflation, right? So the people, they need to really realize that they're being lied to with this inflation number.
Yeah.
Hey, Bill.
And I'm talking about that in the book, of course. I mean, all of this is going to be explained.
Yeah, Joe.
You know how you know you have a sharp guest?
Yeah.
You know how?
Go ahead.
They answer the question before you ask it.
Yeah.
My next question to Cynthia was going to be, and I have it right here, stimulus and small business loans. Where is the money coming from?
Yep.
In relation to the Federal Reserve. I think she just answered that.
Yes, she did.
I'm not wrong. Okay.
Well, see, now, okay, so another thing that they're doing was before they had to have about 10% in reserve at the base. Now, with this CARES Act, they don't have to have anything in reserve. So it's literally printing money out of nothing.
Yeah.
No, they don't have to have any reserve at all anymore. This looks like modern monetary theory, where they think that government can just print Federal Reserve notes, and have no. They admit themselves that it can cause inflation. But they think that government is going to rein in the inflation by raising taxes. But when did we just see with what just happened? When things got tough, did government raise taxes?
Nope.
No, they want to cut the payroll tax. They sent almost everybody a stimulus check.
Yep.
They did the exact opposite of what even the modern monetary theory people think should happen.
Yeah, but they would say that that's happening now. In the future, taxes will be cut. I think that's what would be their argument, their response to that.
Well, they want taxes to be raised. To rein in inflation, you actually have to raise the interest rate.
Yep.
But see, the Federal Reserve, when we had the economic crisis of 2007-2008. They lowered interest rates to basically zero. And then they were trying to they did quantitative easing for years, okay. And then in 2018, they decided it's time to raise interest rates because they were worried about inflation.
Mm-hmm.
That's called quantitative tightening. You're taking the money back out of the system. Well, guess what? The system could not handle even a small raising of interest rates. And they backed off of it immediately, well, almost immediately. And now we're back down to zero interest rate. And they're talking about negative interest rates. So in other countries like Japan, Switzerland,
Germany, I think, as well.
Denmark, they have negative interest rates where you actually pay the bank to keep your money. They use your money, and you pay for the privilege of their using your money to make money off of it. And so, I mean, some people, it probably benefits some people. So in Denmark, if you get a house mortgage, you actually get paid for having your mortgage.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense. I mean, it turns everything upside down. But the UK now is hinting that they're going to go to negative interest rates. See, this is all with the stimulus and with the quantitative easing. They're sort of limited by that zero bound on the interest rate. But if they go back below that, which they haven't done in this country before, then it just, they can just flood the economy with easy money. And they think that's going to lead to prosperity. But, see, this modern monetary theory stuff is not new. Abraham Lincoln basically did the exact same thing that these MMT people are proposing. So when he had to wage the Civil War, and the big bankers were only going to loan him the money at like 25% to 30% interest. So one of his advisors suggested, printing the government's own money, which they called the greenback, and it wasn't at any interest. It didn't cost the people anything. Like, when we pay our federal income tax, it's paying the Federal Reserve for the money they print out of nothing. Anyway, that's a different story. But so Lincoln prints all these greenbacks, and guess what happens? They inflate.
Yep.
And they lose, they were supposed to be, a parity with gold, or, they were supposed to be about the same as the dollar that was backed by gold, because they were technically two separate currencies. And of course, it fell in value, because it wasn't backed by anything. It wasn't backed by gold.
No.
Our dollar now isn't backed by gold, of course. It hasn't been for a long time, since 1971. So it's just been falling. It's worth, I mean, the latest figure I heard was our dollar is worth 2% of what it was when the Federal Reserve started in 1913.
Yeah. Hey, Joe and Cynthia, I want to kind of go off the path here and down a little bit of a rabbit trail. So,
love rabbit trails, Bill.
Yeah, can you put your tinfoil hat on, Joe? And
I never take it off.
Oh, okay. Cynthia, can you put your tinfoil hat on for this next question? And I wanted you to address, Cynthia, the preposterous QAnon claim that Donald Trump has now taken over the Federal Reserve. Can you talk about that for a couple minutes?
See, before I was open-minded about QAnon, but as soon as I saw that they claimed the Federal Reserve had gone bankrupt, I knew that was disinformation. It is literally impossible for the Federal Reserve to go bankrupt. They have a printing press. How are they going to go bankrupt? They can't go bankrupt, basically. But, I looked through the CARES Act. It's not even mentioning the Federal Reserve. So how did it do anything to change the Federal Reserve Act? Nothing has changed.
Yeah.
Right.
It's basically, okay, the Federal Reserve has hired BlackRock to manage their bonds buying, and they're buying ETFs, they're buying securities, and basically the Federal Reserve is going into the stock market and the bond market and propping it up. So it's putting all this money into it to make sure all the stocks don't crash. So that's, a, I mean, a lot of the money is going straight into the stock market.
Yeah. Well, Joe, Cynthia just answered my next question. So you're right. That's
there
how you
go.
Do.
I told you.
That's how you do know that someone that you have is sharp.
So. That's right.
Yeah, because I wanted to bring up that it doesn't make sense that the economy is supposed to be in such bad shape, and yet the stock market is beginning to gain back all the loss that they had. I mean, it's only about 4,000 off from the height before the pandemic hit. So,
right.
And you just explained why.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask Cynthia a question right off of that, Bill.
Yep.
You're pretty sharp too, Bill. Let me tell you, because you pretty much got my next question. The stock market has been all over the place during this this COVID fear campaign, right? Historically, Cynthia, what is the relationship between the stock market and the health of the economy? And now, in the middle of the COVID fear campaign, what is the relationship between the stock market and the health of the economy?
See, they're not really related. They're not. It's been sold as if the stock market is high, then the economy is strong. But they're not related like that because, like we just said, all the stimulus money, and for a long time, that stimulus money, even from quantitative easing from 2000 to 2007 and 2008, that was flowing into the stock market. Now, it's kind of good that it flows into the stock market because if it flows into the general economy, you're going to see really high inflation, if not hyperinflation. So, so you see like really high prices, you see the asset bubbles forming, and then the COVID came in and popped it. And so all of the stocks tank, but then the stimulus money starts to flow into it again. And the Fed is buying outright these stocks and bonds and driving them back up.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it doesn't mean that it has nothing to do with all these people who are losing their businesses. Because they may not be publicly traded companies anyway. Probably a lot of them aren't.
Correct.
That like all the salon owners and the
restaurant owners.
We're just starting to see, in my opinion, we're just starting to see a wave of bankruptcies. It's like AMC Theaters,
mm-hmm.
JCPenney, Hertz, Rent-A-Car. I mean, some big companies are declaring bankruptcy and I think it's just the beginning.
Let me ask a quick question. How helpful, if at all, Cynthia, has the massive stimulus payments and the small business loans been to the economy, and how long can that be sustained?
It can't be sustained forever, and it's just a Band-Aid. The problem with pumping all of this stimulus money into the economy is that it can easily cause hyperinflation. And so what happens there is that you end up paying massive amounts more for things at the grocery store, or I mean, maybe your mortgage is going to stay the same because you already have a contract for it. But when you go to the grocery store, you can be paying 10 times as much for something. that you are right now, because you have so many dollars that are chasing the same amount of goods and services, see, then it just drives up all the prices. So it's not that people are taking advantage of a crisis, it's that the dollar is worth less and their costs are more, and so then it gets passed on to the consumer. And I mean, anybody can look at, there are so many famous examples of hyperinflation history. There's Weimar Germany, there's Argentina and Zimbabwe. I mean, people are, it really causes a lot of suffering, this hyperinflation, because your wages are probably not going to keep up with the rising prices.
No.
And another problem with hyperinflation is that when your wages go up, guess what else happens? Your taxes go up, mm-hmm. because you get bumped into a higher tax bracket. So then they take a bigger chunk of your earnings. So you may be making more money, but your actual purchasing power is less.
Right.
Well, I want to ask Cynthia a question here. We're about 10-15 minutes away from having to end the program. And I want to end on my last question would be something along the lines of a lighter note, adding some levity to the program. you said something about half an hour ago about how the economy was prior to the COVID fear campaign, and how it was, correct me if I'm wrong, you said that it was, let me just ask it this way. Donald Trump had boasted about the economy all along up until the COVID fear campaign. Now, how much credit does Donald Trump deserve for that economy, and what relationship is there when you mix in the Federal Reserve? So as we're looking forward to November, and some of us will remember before the COVID fear campaign, how much of that should be attributed to Donald Trump and his policies? Do you think, Cynthia?
See, the Federal Reserve has basically hijacked monetary policy. So the president, and I don't agree with him on some things, like he wants to have lower interest rates, he even wants to have negative interest rates, and I agree with the Federal Reserve that they should not go below zero. I mean, I don't think we should have a Federal Reserve, period.
Well, yes, we're all in agreement there.
But, so they control the monetary policy. They're supposed to be independent, but since the president can appoint the Fed head, then he has some influence.
So then, if that's true, and I agree that the Federal Reserve does control monetary policy, how come? Why has there been such tension between Donald Trump and Jerome Powell?
Well, Trump wants lower interest rates, and Jerome Powell wants to have it bottom out at zero. And I think it has to do with governments want to have more dollars going to the economy, because then it benefits them. It runs up the stock market. The higher wages can bump people up into higher tax brackets, so the government gets more money for that. But then it's sort of like this false prosperity when you have a lot of dollars in the economy until it comes crashing down. So when they try to take the dollars back out of the economy with the quantitative tightening, it does cause an economic decline, but they're trying to tamp down inflation. See, once this all gets started with this manufactured, manipulated economy that the Federal Reserve does, the free market doesn't work anymore. This all has to be manipulated, and you can see how well it works, right? Mm-hmm. They flood it all with the free money, and then they can't take it out again. It's going to just crash and burn, and then it's going to have to probably get reset to gold, to a gold standard. I think they should go to gold and silver as money, because that's what the Founding Fathers wanted. And, I don't know if they'll do that. That's what they should do. They're going to have to do something when it all comes crashing down. Because they're probably going to be causing a hyperinflationary depression with all of this money flooding into the economy. So, when the stock market was high, because people think when the stock market is high, the economy is strong, that did make Trump look good for having a, quote, strong economy, but it was an asset bubble because all of the stimulus money is going straight into the stock market. Do you see what I'm saying? Because mm-hmm. the people, you can't make a return on your investment on bonds now because it's like zero. And the UK even has a negative paying bond now, minus 0.03% or something. So you buy a government bond and you actually lose money. So it's like, why are people doing this? But see, they're so starved for a return.
Yeah.
You can't buy a government bond to get a return. You can only look at stocks, dividend stocks. Even now with the COVID, you can't even really look at investment properties because people aren't paying their rent.
No.
So there are very few places that you can get any return on your investment. And that's the stock market, really. Because even if you buy gold and silver, those are more like insurance.
Right.
To hold your purchasing power, but they're not going to make you money, really. Because even if you, so say you buy like an ounce of gold now for $1,700, and then we have hyperinflation, and it's like $17,000, well, it's probably still just going to buy the man suit. That it ever was going to buy, you know, but at least you can still buy that amount.
Yeah.
So, and if you only have dollars, see, the stock market with some of the dividend stocks, at least, the idea is that with the hyperinflation, that their prices will go up too. So it's not a terrible place to be invested. Like, if you just have dollars in your bank account, like right now, you might be able to buy, a week's worth of groceries, no problem, you know, every week. But as the dollars actually degrade in value, then you might start struggling to make those bills, to make those payments. But if you have it in something that's going to retain its value, then you can at least sell that and still get your same number of goods. That's just one way to protect yourself. And, and that's what people do with hyperinflation. They would basically, like in Weimar Germany, as soon as they got their paycheck, they would run to the store and they would buy anything. They would buy soap, hairpins, anything to get out of the Reichsmark because it was falling in value so fast. It was falling so quickly that if they went to get their coffee in the morning, they'd buy two cups at a time because by the time they finished their one cup of coffee, it would be more expensive. That's a really extreme example. But even in Zimbabwe recently, in the last couple of years, people would go to the store, and sometimes they would be stopped in the middle of paying because the price had changed and they'd have to pay a higher price.
Jeez.
And that's crazy, right?
Yeah,
it could happen here. It's happened before. Yeah. I mean, and also it has happened in this country because we had the Continental. We had the Continental paper currency during the Revolutionary War. And that's the main reason our founding fathers did not want us to have paper currency.
Mm-hmm.
They had Article 1, Section 8. Gosh, I hope I'm right. But they wanted gold and silver, you know, seeing nothing but gold and silver as currency. And, of course, with Lincoln and his greenback, Supreme Court said, okay, it's fine to have legal tender, and there are all these legal tender cases, and they said, oh, it's constitutional, but I just don't think it's sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, Bill, over this quick last 45 minutes, what comes to my mind immediately, among a bunch of other things, is we really need to dissect some of these financial issues more comprehensively. And I know it's hard for people listening to digest all this stuff, but I think in the future we'll have Cynthia back, and we'll hit some stuff. I think more we'll go into more deeper issues rather than like. In an hour, you can only touch on so many things and go so deep.
Right.
And before you know, the hour is gone. So for our listeners, we'll definitely have Cynthia back in the near future. And we'll see how things go with this whole COVID fear campaign and how the economy progresses. And I know that Cynthia is paying attention. You know, I see her Facebook posts all the time, and she's on top of all this stuff. So we'll have her back for sure. But with your permission, I would like to end on a note of levity. Question.
Question.
Bill, okay?
Yep, go ahead.
Okay. I asked for the Mount Rushmore of orchestrated deceptions, and we could have spent probably an hour, 2 hours on that.
Mm-hmm.
But we wanted to get to the... So let me ask this. Let me ask your Mount Rushmore, Cynthia and Bill, of the Four Stooges of United States governors. Here are mine.
Jeez.
Tom Wolf, Pennsylvania. Jay Inslee, Washington. And I'm aware of that mostly through Tina's Facebook posts. She calls him Dimsley. I get a kick out. Gavin Newsom in California and Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan. Can anybody top that? Is there an honorable mention?
Well, there's the Oregon woman. She's pretty bad. Was that Kate Brown?
Yeah. Kate Brown?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll put her down here. Honorable mention. Anybody knock those four off?
Who's the Virginia governor? Can't think of the name. But they would be my honorable mention also.
Virginia governor.
Yeah. Can't think of the name right now.
I can't either.
Who's the Illinois one?
Illinois? Louisiana's pretty bad too.
Well, I mean, it's just shocking that they are forbidding churches from meeting, and I'm sorry that the First Amendment is pretty clear.
Yeah.
They can't make laws that prohibit or infringe upon people's exercise of religion.
Well, I'll tell you what's more disturbing than that, Cynthia, is the fact that you have the majority of quote-unquote Christians. Maybe I shouldn't say quote-unquote. You have the majority of Christians agreeing with that. Not only agreeing with that, getting angry with people like me, I get into Facebook wars with people who think that, who agree with this.
Yeah.
That's more disturbing to me.
Yep.
Well.
Yeah, me as well.
Yeah.
Well, Cynthia, we want to thank you for taking the time out to come on with us tonight. Den of Vipers, any idea yet on a release?
I think it's going to be in the fall.
In the fall.
Oh.
Okay.